Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on the road.
Welcome to the show, folks. We appreciate you being out there. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show, coming to you live as we can be on FM 105.5 and AM 660. The Answer, 407-774-8255 is the number. I am Christopher Hart. Jeff Sinis is with me on the bridge today. Nick LoCicero is going to be out all week long. But Jeff, of course, knows exactly what to do because...
How you doing?
That's all right. He produces our show every Sunday night and has been doing it the whole 5.5 years we've been here. Matter of fact, Jeff, I think you've only missed, what, one or two Sunday night shows? Hadn't it been in that time?
Yeah, I think you're correct. How you doing?
All right. Okay, so feel free to give us a call. Abe Katzman is going to join us shortly from Israel. We got a lot, once again, to talk about with Abe. And we got a couple other guests going to join us today. John Stewart's going to join us. No, not that John Stewart. Another John Stewart. A John Stewart who was a pro wrestler and a promoter. And also a candidate for Congress a couple of times up in Illinois. So we're going to talk mostly politics with him today. It'll be interesting stuff, I'm sure. And then Mike Bass is scheduled to sit in for a little while this afternoon as well. Of course, Mike is a sponsor of ours, Prime Quest Wealth Strategies is his business, and taking care of your money and making it grow is what he does. And he'll be talking to us a little bit later on in the show. Got a lot to talk about. I hope you caught our show last night. If you did not, you're going to unfortunately have to wait till Nick gets back until we put that in the archive. But this is, of course, another good reason why you should, in case you can't be near a radio, but, of course, you have your smartphone with you. Another reason why you need to take advantage of that free WORL-AM-FM app. All you got to do is go to your iTunes or Play Store or wherever you get your apps and download the free WORL-AM-FM app. Just by search for that, WORL-AM-FM. And you'll be able to listen live on that device. You'll be able to interact with the station. You'll be able to participate in polls. We got a poll question up today. Is Apple, I'm paraphrasing, is Apple doing the right thing by not cooperating with the government and trying to decrypt that phone for the FBI of the San Bernardino bombers? Or I should say terrorists, not bombers. Well, they were trying to be bombers, but they would have gotten that far if circumstances had been different. Anyway, you'll be able to do that. You'll be able to take advantage of the talk back feature where you'll be able to leave messages that might actually end up on the air. And so it's a great thing to take advantage of. We talked a great deal last night about the, of course, obviously the South Carolina and the Nevada results. I'll just sort of summarize that Trump had a huge victory. You can look at it in a number of different ways. Of course, it was a double-digit victory. But if you look at that, who voted for him, he won every congressional district in the state. And even in a state that's not a winner-take-all state, he took all. He got all the delegates. That pretty much sums it up. He won across pretty much all demographics except the most very educated, which, of course, his rude, crude style just does not comport with. Most of those went to Rubio, the young wonder boy. And by the way, there was a fan, or evidently a pack, I guess it was, a Marco Rubio's, Super Pack of Marco Rubio's, that was putting out a storyline, I guess an ad, calling him the Harry Potter, the Wonder Boy, and calling Trump, I've never read the books or seen any of the movies, but called Trump Voldemort. I guess he's the bad guy. He's the old bad guy in the Harry Potter. Whoever the old bad guy is in the Harry Potter series, that's who they were referring to in Trump and calling, you know, Rubio Harry Potter. Well, he kind of looks like a young boy. Yeah, I'll go along with that. The boy wizard, they were calling him. One of his super PACs evidently put that out. But it was a decisive victory for Moby Dick. But as I characterized it last night, he came out yesterday and on the talk shows, he was kind of sober, was the word I used, because he said, look, you know, I'm up against some smart guys and they want to win this thing. You know, it's going to get tougher now going out. And I likened it to The Apprentice show. Only now, it's Donald Trump who's one of the contestants for The Apprentice show. And he's in a situation where he hasn't been before. Before, he was the top dog in the big chair firing people. But now he's one of the contestants, and we're kind of the top dog sitting there firing people by not voting for him. And he understands that, because he's seen it season after season on The Apprentice, that you start out with a bunch of people who all, you know, on the surface of it appear to have a lot of promise, but the weaklings pretty much get weeded out fairly quickly. And as you get further into the competition, you get to the better competitors and the ones who are going to be tougher to beat. And he understands that going forward. He knows he does not have this thing locked up, but he is definitely well on his way. And as far as Nevada goes, Bernie Sanders got burnt again. The whole point of the caucus system is to discourage people from participating. It's not to encourage people to come out and participate. It's to make it more difficult and cumbersome so you won't come out, that only the diehards will come out. And then they have at it. And, of course, Hillary has the luck of the draw, literally, again, for superdelegates. She drew the high card. I think she drew an ace. Hey, you can't make this stuff up, right? Or maybe you can, because the Democratic Party sure seems to be making it up and making it work for Hillary Clinton. So that pretty well sums it up. Marco Rubio does come off a little bit better, but really he's really no better off than he was before, because he still has serious problems with the positions that he's taken and his lack of experience. All right, we got Dave on the line who has a question. Dave, thank you for calling tonight. We appreciate you being out there.
I have a quick question. It doesn't relate to politics, but it's the story that's been in the news locally. The 15-year-old boy that ran over the deputy's foot, leg, whatever. Turns out that this fine, upstanding young upstart has already been arrested for aggravated assault battery on a deputy.
Right.
He had outstanding warrants already. So has anybody asked the sheriff, why would you send a single female deputy sheriff to go arrest a person, a male, don't know how big he is, but he's 15, so he's probably not 4'7", who's already shown a propensity to be violent on deputies, and sends a single female deputy to do the job? What am I missing here?
Well, I can't speak for Sheriff Jerry Demings, and I have no.
I ask him, well, what the heck is going on?
I have no answer for you. He's probably.
And had it not been that he turned himself in, they couldn't find him.
Well, I'm sure they eventually would have, and he probably knew that. But get back to your original question, I've met Jerry Demings a couple of times, and I'm sure he's probably wondering the same thing himself. Being the sheriff, I doubt he's in on the servicing or the carrying out of every warrant.
Go to the warrant, you know.
Obviously somebody didn't see everything. Maybe they thought this was you know, just a regular 15-year-old kid and didn't know. Obviously, somebody didn't do their homework, and now we have a deputy. And once again, though, this is why we support the Wounded Officers Initiative, because this woman, we don't know, you know, the extent how, you know, these injuries may affect her career. So this is why we want to support them.
Yeah, one report said a broken leg, one report said a broken foot. Yeah. But nonetheless, when you got somebody that shows propensity for violence, you go in numbers.
Oh,
I'm not saying
you
had to send a SWAT team. Don't misunderstand.
Yeah.
But you don't send Barney. You know.
Well, obviously, this woman was far more capable than that. I think that's a little bit of an exaggeration. I understand, but the fact.
All right.
So, but you know, I'm sure those are questions that the higher ups in the sheriff's department should be, if they're not already asking and finding the answers out too. Thank you, Dave. But this is an instance, and this goes on every day all across the country, and there is no organization to speak of there for officers and deputies and the like who are injured and or wounded in the line of duty. So please visit and support the Wounded Officers Initiative. That's woundedofficersinitiative.org. And they got a fundraising annual banquet coming up that I'll be attending here in April. And I hope you folks can help out and maybe attend at that. Real quick program note. Thursday night, there's going to be the next in the line of Republican debates. This one now, there will be only five little Indians. And you remember the old song, five little Indians or you know, 10 little Indians. Anyway, I know you're not supposed to sing that song anymore. It's not politically correct. Well, maybe that's one reason why Donald Trump is popular. We want to be able to sing 10 little Indians again. But anyway, they're down to five little Indians. And those guys will be debating Thursday night from Houston, and this will be another CNN Salem Media Group partnership for this debate. Hugh Hewitt will be there as part of the debate team, and there will be live coverage beginning at 6:00 Thursday night. So we're going to hand it off after 1 hour of the show Thursday night. We'll come in, we'll do the regular 5 to 6 o'clock drive time hour, and we'll hand over that prime time hour to the national fellas, and they'll pick it up from there. The debate is scheduled to begin itself at 8:30, but there will, of course, be a lot of great lead up and interviews and things like that leading into the debate. So that's going to be Thursday night. We'll be here for 1 hour Thursday night, and then hand it over to the national team for the CNN Salem Media Group Republican primary, presidential primary debate, live from Houston. All right, we'll be live from Altamont Springs with Abe Katzman, live from Jerusalem, when we come right back after this short break. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. You ever feel like you're on that crazy train? Well, listen to us and we'll help you get off of it. All right, because we'll get you right on to the truth. We're here, we're live, the American Adversaries, coming to you on FM 105.5 and AM 660. The Answer, 407-774-8255 is always the phone number. I am Christopher Hart, and on the line right now we have our man in Jerusalem coming to us live from there tonight, Abe Katzman. Abe, once again, thanks for being with us.
Hey, great to be with you, thanks.
Okay, how's the weather over there tonight?
A little drizzly, nothing too bad, nothing too good.
All right. We had a beautiful day, but evidently some wet weather is on the way here as well. Let's start with the so-called big breakthrough in the Syria truce negotiations. They have a provisional deal?
Yeah. Once again, John Kerry has solved Syria. It's amazing how many times he's able to do it.
I'm telling you.
they announced this provisional truce. I mean, I think a week ago they had they had a similar announcement. I'm not sure why this one is so different, because this one also isn't taking effect immediately. This one, I mean, we were joking about it last week, how they make a truce and then, you know, bomb like crazy for the next week.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going to happen here also. They've got this new truce between the U.S. The U.S. and Russia basically came to this agreement. And it becomes effective on Saturday. So I'm not sure that I'd want to be in Syria this week in any area that the Russians are targeting, because they're still going to be hitting hard. Once again, this deal does not cover ISIS. They're still allowed to attack ISIS. They're still allowed to attack the al-Nusra Front, and they're still allowed to attack a bunch of other militias, that as long as they consider them terror groups.
Well, then who is
there's
the,
no?
Well, I know you say that the deal is between the U.S. and Russia, but I mean, on the ground, who else is going to supposedly stop fighting? I mean, usually you have a truce with the bad guys or the other side, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing about this. It doesn't even say where in particular the fighting is supposed to stop or where it's going to continue. I don't think there's any enforcement mechanism in it. There's no discussion of, let's say, of Assad's future. I think they're trying to make this something that will lead to broader talks, kind of the continuation of the talks in Geneva that seem to go on forever without accomplishing anything. But the again, the U.S. has had to fall in line behind whatever Russia wanted. Earlier, I think at the beginning of the month, Russia had proposed a ceasefire to take place March 1st. And the U.S. said, no, it had to be immediate. So now it's going to be whatever day Saturday is, what is it, 27th?
The 27th. So, yeah, pretty close.
Okay, so the U.S. bargained hard and got a couple of days.
Oh, boy, aren't they something?
Deal.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Look, there will be peace there when the Russians and the Iranians are ready for there to be peace there. And peace is it's a so-called peace. It's not exactly freedom and liberty that are going to break out.
Oh, absolutely not. It's quite the opposite, I'm sure. And also, for there to be any kind of semblance of peace, doesn't there have to be some sort of decisive, you know, battleground victory?
Yeah, you'd think so. Although I think that as long as the if the Russians, it depends what the Russians want here. Let's assume for the moment that nobody anticipates Syria ever returning to what we always think of as the borders of Syria.
Right.
It will now be broken up into some kind of Balkanized, these areas of influence. And if the Russians feel secure, they've got what they want, then I think they're fine. As long as they, they'll protect Assad along with Iran, and they have they've got their presence in as much control as they want. So anyway, I think that's what we've got.
Okay. All right. I've noticed that here in the last couple of days, the local paper, once again, some Palestinians stabbing people in Jerusalem and around Israel, and they usually end up dead, shot by police or soldiers. But it does seem to be going on, and one soldier was mentioned in particular, Sergeant, help me on the name here if you can, Tuvia Yanai Weissman, 21.
Exactly right.
Okay,
yep.
A U.S. citizen who was stabbed to death Thursday by two Palestinian teens. Were those teens captured or killed?
Yeah, I believe they were, you know what? I'm actually not certain.
Okay. It's unfortunate.
I think that they were stopped, and I think that they caught, I think there was a third, another Palestinian involved who they've now arrested also.
I see.
It's really too bad. I mean, this is a guy who's, he's a soldier, father of a small baby. He was on leave. It's interesting. He didn't have his gun with him. And there's a new rule now because of this that soldiers, even when on leave, even when off the base, have got to carry their guns with them.
Yeah.
This was really too bad. He ran towards the attackers who were beginning to stab shoppers in a supermarket. I mean, they came into a supermarket in order to stab people, and he ran to them, apparently stopped. Other stabbings from going on, but was killed in the process.
Wow, that's a true hero there.
Yep.
Well, all right. Well, we'll remember him. Is this changing the, literally speaking, changing the face of the city? Are there security structures going up around, more checkpoints, that sort of thing?
I don't, nothing that I feel, nothing that, I'm sure that it's happening, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot more than there was before. I don't know why that is, or if maybe there is just a lot going on that we don't see. But you don't feel it. You don't feel like there's some, security crackdown. Feels pretty much like it did before. Not for the people who are, I know people who have witnessed attacks. I know people who have, who are related to people who have been attacked. So people feel it that way. But in terms of the way the city functions, there really doesn't seem to be that much difference.
Is there a heightened sense of suspicion?
There is. And people are wary of going to certain areas. The downtown area is does not have the kinds of crowds that they used to have, that they usually had. On the other hand, they say that tourism actually has not been hit as hard as they initially thought.
That's good.
They said comparing it to 2014, it's been about the same. But then 2014, there was a war all summer with Hamas.
Right.
So I'm not sure that that's the year you want to use as a benchmark.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Abe, we're up against the clock. Once again, if you'll stay with us, we got a lot more to talk about. And Abe's got some really cool news, too, coming out of Israel that you're going to be very, very excited to hear about. You are listening to The American Adversary. Okay, we're back. We're here. We're live. 407-774-8255 is the number. Christopher Hart here. Abe Katzman on the phone with us right now, live in Jerusalem. Abe, let's talk American politics here for just a few minutes. Of course, you saw the results out of South Carolina and Nevada. Let's talk Nevada real quickly first. It appears as though the fix is in for Hillary. No pun intended, but what do you think?
Well, it's looking that way. On the other hand, I wonder, I've seen a number of media reports, and my instinct is that they're a little bit too quick to declare everything over for her. And I think that it's, maybe a little bit of wishful thinking. I imagine that most of the people in the media are supporters of hers. And I just think that they're hoping that this is the case, and they're kind of declaring it to be the fact. But I don't know. There's a ways to go. I know we've got the issue with the superdelegates.
Right.
One thing I'll say is that very little about this year's election has been linear. You know, you haven't, it's not like everything has gone exactly according to plan. Things happen, things get disrupted, what looks to be, airtight predictions get upended. So I think it's too soon to make any big declarations about how any of this is going to turn out.
Boy, I think that just encapsulated Jeb Bush's thoughts, right?
What did he spend, $130 million, something like that?
Yeah, and I pointed out on the show last night, I counted them up last night. I believe I got it. We started out with 8 governors in the Republican field. And who would have thunk out of those 8 mm-hmm. governors that John Kasich would be the last man standing? It's quite a feat for him.
Right, and the conventional wisdom was that it was going to be a governor. After Obama, you were going to get somebody who had actually run something before. And
yeah.
You take a look at what you got. You got, you got somebody who's run something, but it's a real estate empire. It's nothing to do with a state, nothing to do with the country.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe you heard the news today that Ted Cruz either fired, asked to resign, or got the resignation of one of his top campaigns. Officials because of some, questionable tactics that they were using. Do you think his campaign has got far to go? I mean, he was another one with a lot of promise that's, kind of been his own worst enemy in a way.
I think so. I think my sense is that he's in trouble. I mean, a lot of people were saying that if he, you know, that South Carolina was a state built for him, and if he couldn't do better than third, even if it was a close third, that doesn't bode well. I think the biggest problem for him is that the more people see of him, I think he just rubs people the wrong way, a lot of people the wrong way. Not every, you know, I when you look at his policy-wise, I think, you know, he's as solid as they come in terms of conservative credentials. And
yeah.
Yet he just doesn't, there's something about him that I think irks a lot of people. And I think the opposite is actually the case with
Marco,
let's say with Rubio.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's something very endearing. I think people respond well to him, and likability is a big factor in this. I think Hillary Clinton's discovering that also.
Oh, it's huge factor. Yeah, it's
huge.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because this morning I was writing some notes, and you know, I kind of a lot of times put things in wrestling terms, and I wrote persona / ring skills. Rubio got persona, no skills. Cruz got skills, no persona. And Trump got them both. And they may not be the political skills that we normally associate with this, but he's got demonstrable skills that people are valuing. And so he's going to still, I think, be the one to beat. Now, I don't think he's got this because obviously he's got a lot of forces out there going to be working against him. But what would you say would be Trump's biggest problem going forward?
Well, Trump's biggest problem is Trump. That's both his biggest asset and his biggest liability.
Yeah.
He's you never know what he might say next. He doesn't know what he might say next.
I think you're right about that.
There's something very undisciplined about him still. You'd think at this point, even though I think in many ways he had cultivated a certain more presidential persona, he lets it drop more often than I think he should. You know, I don't know what at some point also, I mean, everybody talks about tax returns he's going to have to produce. And at some point, he's going to have to talk about policy, although that's what everybody says. And he always seems to defy whatever it is that everybody says. So he's still tapping into whatever he was tapping into. He's still drawing good numbers. I think that the idea that there's a ceiling to his support has some credibility, but people have been saying that for a long time, and he's way out ahead in terms of the delegate count so far. So, hard to argue with that kind of success.
All right, now one thing that he did mention in terms of sort of policy was in terms of negotiating the long sought after peace deal between Israel and Palestinians. And he said that his approach would be to come in as a neutral person. Now, on the surface of it, you know, that would seem to shake up a lot of, I would think, Jews and Israelis. But it would, compared to what we got now, it'd at least be a huge step back in the right direction, wouldn't you think? And isn't there a bit of logic to it, too, that for either, you know, if both sides are going to accept, if the United States is going to play this here role of peacemaker, don't we have to be presumed to be sort of neutral?
Yeah, I think I don't take it as badly as a lot of other people did. I mean, he said, I'm going to be the neutral guy.
Right.
I don't want to say whose fault anything is.
Right.
On the one hand, when you're talking about a very close, very embattled ally, that doesn't make the citizens of that ally feel really secure.
Sure.
But he's made a number of statements. I think with him, because he's not so disciplined, whatever he says, it's kind of a Rorschach test. People are going to respond
how they want to
see it. More about them than it is about him.
Right. Yeah.
On the other hand, he's said a number of times, he always says, I love Israel. He believes in Israel. I'm not worried
about
his attitude toward Israel.
And he also said, look, this would not be a deal that I would necessarily make a big priority, because they teach kids to hate over there. And how do you overcome that? In other words, he sees it, and he said this would be the most, this would be the deal of all deals, obviously. And he says for that reason, he would tend to shy away.
Well, he has said that he's not sure that the sides are willing to make the sacrifices they have to make. Again, something that didn't sit so well with a lot of Israelis.
Yeah.
But even so, there are a couple of things about this. On the one hand, he believes he can make, you know, that he can make any kind of deal, that he can get anybody to come to any kind of compromise. And I'll say the person who it reminds me of is Barack Obama.
Yeah.
In terms of a belief in himself and his ability to bring people together, Barack Obama 2008. I don't know that Barack Obama 2016 thinks that way.
Yeah.
But at least Trump, though, is not wedded to the idea that his solutions are the right solutions. If something fails, he cuts his losses, he goes. Obama keeps coming back to the same, you know, thinks he knows everything,
right,
and he's going to pursue things with the same policies he had before. But for Trump, you know, you have to recognize that the problem here goes back to, you can trace it back to whatever you want to trace it back to, but let's say in 1947, there was a partition. There was an independent Palestinian state that was going to be set up against, next to an independent Jewish state.
Right.
And the Arab side
didn't want it.
Went to war, a genocidal war.
Yeah.
That's what they were going to kill the Jews and drive them into the sea.
Right.
And they have yet to accept the idea of a Jewish state anywhere with any borders.
Right.
They've rejected it time and again under Olmert, under Ehud Barak, it goes on and on, and nobody seems to get it. But that seems to be a kind of fundamental problem here.
All right. What about Rubio? Has he got any promise, any problems in particular that you see?
You know, I think that he's, I guess the word that comes to mind is untested.
Yeah.
I think
absolutely.
That in terms of orientation, I think he's very solid.
Yeah.
We'll put immigration aside for the moment, because that's complicated, and I think he made a big mistake. I think he thinks he made a big mistake, and he just has to spin it somehow. But with everything else, I think his instincts are very good. I think his orientation is good. He really is pretty much down the line solidly conservative. And I don't see any weak spot there. I think the big problem is that he just hasn't been around long enough to have done all that much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess that's the weakness.
Yeah. Okay. I'm ashamed to say I don't have the gentleman's name in front of me, but there was a death this past week of a survivor of one of the Nazi Holocaust camps. And evidently he was the last survivor of this particular camp. Am I getting my details confused here?
Yeah, that's almost exactly right.
Okay.
They were reporting that he was the last survivor of Treblinka.
Treblinka.
Treblinka was a bad camp. They didn't even pretend that it was a labor camp. This was a death camp.
Yeah,
they gassed people right away. There were 875,000 people killed at Treblinka, overwhelmingly Jews. And there were, out of 875,000 killed, 67 survivors.
Wow.
Now, there were a couple of people. It turns out that there were a couple of people who had managed to escape that are still alive. But there was a rebellion that this man was part of. Samuel Willenberg is his name. They stole some weapons. This was in August of 1943. Set fire to the camp, fled into the woods. They were being shot at by machine guns. Most of the people were killed, but a few got away. He was shot in the leg, actually. Some who got away, the Polish villagers returned them to the Nazis, caught them and returned them to the Nazis. But anyway, the Nazis then, they didn't want this known yet that they were doing this. So they destroyed the remnants of the camp to cover up their crimes. And this man actually, even though he was shot, he apparently looked non-Jewish enough that he was able to pass in Poland. He joined the Polish underground, survived the war, came to Israel, became an artist and a sculptor, and lived to 93 and was, you know, lived a full life. So what they're talking about, though, which is because he was the last survivor of this camp, or at least believed to be, is that we're kind of turning a page here. We've always been used to having actual survivors around, and they're in very short order, there aren't going to be any. There are about 180,000 survivors in Israel, and I think the same number worldwide, but about 1,000 die every month, and that number is accelerating. So within 7 or 8 or 9 years, who's going to be left? I mean, as it is, these people are in their 80s and 90s. Then what happens? You know, the oral histories and the museums and everything are very nice, but there's nothing like hearing firsthand accounts from people who were actually there about what went on. And it's really too bad that we're going to be losing that.
Well, and I guess one of the things we must make sure we do is to be sure that we teach our children every year, the new children, the atrocities that were committed. 875,000 lives, 67 survivors.
One camp. 67 survivors, one camp, right.
What a testament to survival, though, from Samuel Willenberg. Medical breakthroughs. You texted me or emailed me today about some really amazing things having to do with Alzheimer's disease and radiation sickness. Please fill us in.
Yeah, there have been the Israeli biotech world has been doing some pretty amazing things. And this week there were a couple of big stories. There's an Israeli scientist who apparently has successfully reversed the symptoms of Alzheimer's in mice. We're a long way from a human cure, but if you can reverse it in mice, then at least it's theoretically possible to reverse it. And maybe the same thing that worked on the mice works on the people.
Is this a drug, a surgical technique? Do you have any idea?
It's not a surgical technique. It's something to do with manipulating certain proteins and cells and things that I don't really understand.
Real high tech science going on there.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
And also an Israeli biotech firm developed an anti-radiation therapy, which is being looked at as actually a cure. They've been testing it on animals. They've been exposing animals to like what would be lethal doses of radiation, large mammals, people, you know, they're one step below us, and they're getting nearly 100% recovery for these animals. The NIH is now is on board. They're studying it. They're expecting FDA approval in the next year, and the U.S. apparently is planning on stocking up on it. And this is the kind of thing that could protect people against the effects of a dirty bomb or nuclear fallout or whatever it is. But, I mean, this is big.
Is this a pharmaceutical drug, something you take orally or inject?
I think it's injections. It's some kind of cell therapy. I think they said it's a placenta-based cell therapy, and I believe it's a matter of injections.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Jeff, give us another minute or two here. This is fascinating news. Now, could this also be used, perhaps? I would think, for instance, when they use radiation treatments to treat for cancer, and people get radiation sickness from the treatments and that sort of thing, because it help in that aspect as well.
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. I would think it could for exactly the same reasons that it works on this. I mean, if it can work on lethal doses of radiation, I don't know why it wouldn't be able to help people who are taking radiation therapy for their cancer. That I didn't see any comments about, but I would imagine it's got to be something they look at.
Boy, that is that's extraordinary news, and that is powerful stuff, and that really is a tremendous breakthrough in a lot of ways, because it sounds like you're saying they're using, as you said, cell therapy. In other words, they're using the body's own immune system and own processes in order to reverse the ill effects of bad things.
Yeah. And it is impressive. You step back sometimes and you look at what Israeli technology and Israeli biotech has done, and here's this little country, 8 million people, and they're it's incredible these types of breakthroughs that are being done, and also here with barely a moment's rest from one military emergency after another. Which may have something, the two might be related. I mean, being threats of annihilation, I could see, would concentrate the mind a little bit.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
If you're facing the possibility of a dirty bomb, maybe you figure out a way to neutralize it.
Wow. Well, I'm all for putting those guys up for the Nobel Prize in medicine or science or whatever they qualify for. That is fantastic news, and I'm glad that many of the people in our audience are hearing it first here from you, Abe Katzman, because you are the best, man. We appreciate you so much.
Well, I thank you. I thank you for the opportunity. It's great to speak to you guys.
All right. Well, we appreciate you. God bless you, and we'll be praying for you, Israel, and Samuel Willenberg. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. We'll get back to the regular business here in just a minute. Just real quick, once again, Thursday night at 6 o'clock, national coverage of the Houston debate of the GOP candidates begins right here live. CNN teaming up with the Salem Media Group to bring you that debate. Got a listener who's been listening to this show ever since we started the show. She's very special to me. Her name's Rosalie. She used to call in as Rosie the Riveter. And Rosalie has got a granddaughter who's a beautiful little girl. Her name is Mila. And she was born with a heart defect and has already had two stents put in and apparently is going to need some open heart surgery. Basically has like a little hole in her tiny little heart there. And this, by the way, is something that the parents knew about. Evidently, the sonograms that the mother was undergoing revealed this, and they decided to have this beautiful little child regardless of what they knew that they were in for. And some of you have heard of the site GoFundMe. GoFundMe is one of these crowdfunding organizations where if you have a need or if you desire whatever, you put your case, you put your cause up there, and then people can send you money. And it's amazing that people raise a lot of money on these sites, oftentimes for business-type things. This isn't that sort of thing. This is to help these parents provide for this little baby girl. What I'd like you to do, if you can afford it, I really would appreciate it. You can call a special favor to me, and I'll owe you one, all right? Go to GoFundMe. Go to GoFundMe and search for Mila Raines Heart Fund. That's MILAREIGNS, Heart, HEART, Heart Fund. And you can hashtag Mila Strong, MILAREIGNS, Heart Fund, hashtag Mila Strong. Please go there. That's at GoFundMe and help her out. This little child is just as adorable as she can be, and you'll find all the information that you need to help her there. And once again, I'm asking you as a favor for me and for her, and we'll both owe you one, okay? And I think you'll feel good about helping. Their goal is $10,000. They're about a third of the way, 30% of the way there now. Let's see if we can help out. That's GoFundMe, MILAREIGNS, Myla Raines, Heart Fund, hashtag.
Ladies and gentlemen, step it right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a roll on a honey.
Welcome back to the show, folks, or welcome to the show if you're just now tuning in. We appreciate you so very much for being out there listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show, coming to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight. Nicholas Cicero is out this week, but Jeff, of course, produces our show every Sunday night, as he has for 5.5 years, so he knows his way around the bridge.
How you doing?
There he is. 407-774-8255 is the number if you would like to jump in on things here today. Just a couple of things before we get to our next guest. A quick heads up, if you didn't hear in the first hour of the show, Thursday night, we're going to give up the second hour of our show, that 6 to 7 o'clock hour, to the national coverage of the Republican debate live from Houston, brought to you by Salem Media Group and CNN and their partnership as they bring a number of these debates to you. And so that will be this Thursday. Just keep that in mind. And also, you'll want to, if you haven't already, or please, anyway, download the free WORL-AM-FM app into your smart device. That way you can take us with you wherever you go, and you can interact with the station. You can participate in a talk back feature where you can leave messages. And, of course, we got polls going on every day, contests and games and giveaways and things. And today's poll question is Apple doing the right thing by refusing to assist the FBI in decrypting that phone of the San Bernardino terrorists? Got another guest lined up with us right now, and this man is a former professional wrestler, wrestled almost 20 years. He's currently a wrestling promoter. He is also has run for the U.S. Congress a couple of times. He lost one of those seats to the U.S. Senator from Illinois, Mark Kirk. So I want to bring on to the show today the illustrious Johnny Stewart. John, are you out there?
Hi, Ed. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, you do a better introduction than most ring announcers that I wrestled with.
Is that right? Yeah, Jeff and I were checking out some of your videos there.
Yeah, pretty funny, huh?
Yeah. I like that on the back of your trunks, on the back of your white trunks there, you had spoiled rotten.
Spoiled rotten, yeah. You know, when I first ran for office, my campaign manager said, I don't know, we got to get rid of these pictures with your sequin robes and boa feathers. You know, people are going to think maybe you're, not what you say you are.
Yeah, but
that's always fun, dodging those questions and pictures.
There you go. Well, I told Jeff they ought to issue spoiled rotten underwear to all the politicians out there, because they're the ones that are spoiled rotten, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's just get a little background from you here first. What made you want to get into professional wrestling?
You know, my dad's been a longtime car dealer in the Chicago area, and another car dealer who sponsored Dick the Bruiser in his wrestling show for 15 years gave my father wrestling tickets one day. So my father grabbed the whole family, and we went down to wrestling at the International Amphitheater. And the International Amphitheater is like, you know, what would you would find, you know, the day after the apocalypse, you know, those kind of,
right,
that kind of clientele was there.
Yeah,
and,
uh-huh.
You know, by the first match, everyone's screaming for blood. My mom has us dressed up like we're going to church. I mean, it was just, you know, a really horrific scene for the Stewart family from the suburbs. But I was, you know, like any other person that is, you know, attracted to something at the young age, I was immediately, you know, just absolutely hooked and said, you know, I want to do this. I want this attention. I want to be there in the ring. And, you know, I was a really good football player. I was recruited out of high school. But I wanted to go to Memphis State University because I knew wrestling was popular in Memphis with Jerry Lawler. And back then, which people don't understand, in the 70s and 80s and 60s, wrestling was very secretive. You did not just, you know, go to the back of a magazine and show up to a wrestling school. You had to stalk a wrestler or a promoter, and I mean that in the literal sense, and it really begged them to have to train you, to show them that you were going to do the biggest thing, which was to keep the secret. And sure enough, I saw a promoter in a grocery store as I was playing spring football for the University of Memphis. And, you know, 2 weeks later, I quit, started training on my 19th birthday. And while I was still taking classes at Memphis State, I started wrestling on TV and became the hit of the Memphis State campus. And as they say in the entertainment business, the rest is history.
And now you're a wrestling promoter. Evidently, the business has been pretty good for you.
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad. You know, in this business, it's like being a race car driver in the 60s and 70s when the speed was increasing and the safety didn't meet the, you know, match the speed. And, you know, 60 plus of my friends and colleagues are dead. You know, so, you know, to be considered yourself successful in wrestling, I think one of the prerequisites is that you're still alive. You know, and I'm thankful enough to still be married to the same woman for 16 years. I didn't abandon my children by having to go on the road and accomplished all of my dreams that I wanted to with wrestling. So I, you know, without sounding Pollyanna and ham-handed and Capra-esque, I am probably one of the luckiest guys to ever come out of wrestling because I've got my brains and I've got my body still to some degree. And I survived the journey. And I think, you know, with 65 guys dying in the past 15 years, I think that's the thing that you have to hold up as your top jewel on your crown is that you actually survived. And I know that sounds harsh or cruel and maybe a little morose, but that is the way that I think myself and a lot of other men look at it. Because I can always make money, you know, I can always, you know, do other things with my life, but, you know, I can't do that from a grave. So I'm very thankful that it did end the way it did, and you know, stayed off of and never tried drugs and basically stayed off of steroids as long as I can. Oh, that hurt me success-wise, but again, I survived the journey, and I'm so thankful for that because I'm just a happier human being to be able to say that I accomplished, you know, two or three of my lifelong dreams, which I don't find a lot of people have the ability to say, and I don't say that braggadociously. I say that, again, very respectfully of the industry and knocking on wood and thanking my creator that I was able to experience that.
I take it the industry has come a long way since those days.
Oh, I mean, it's, you know, I laugh. I was talking to somebody at a political function on Friday. I said, if you would have told me in 1986 that I could have went to Ted Turner or, you know, like Ric Flair, who was the booker, and said, Rick, you know, Road Warrior Animal hurt my feelings last night in Detroit and hollered at me when we were out to dinner. And, you know, they would have thrown me out of the arena, they being the wrestlers.
Right.
You know, to now, to be able, you know, to say you have an injury and get 2 weeks off and tell Vince McMahon or John Laurinaitis or Triple H that someone hurt your feelings. And to be taken seriously and not laughed out of the locker room, it's ridiculous. I think I would have survived better in today's industry because I was so young and a babe in the woods and happy-go-lucky, and not a lot of guys appreciated that. Pro wrestlers are notorious for being extremely uptight and anal retentive and don't like a lot of smiles in the locker room, believe it or not.
Is that right?
But it was a it was a really, really tough business back in the 80s. And, again, just that's why I always say I survived. And I don't say that. I'm not that proud of the industry back then. The way we treated each other was it was a shark tank in a prison yard on a rock and roll tour set, you know. But yeah, it was brutal, and I think it certainly changed for the better. I really believe that.
Well, it certainly sounds like some pretty good training for the political arena, which is where you found yourself next. How did you go from pro wrestling seriously to wanting to be in politics?
Yeah, you know, again, my father being a prominent local car dealer. And of course, you know, you have to, Donald Trump is right. You got to mix it with the politicians and play nice with everybody. And we had a couple of Democrat and Republican politicians that bought cars from us and were friends of the family. And when I was slowly kind of getting out of the wrestling business and integrating myself in the family business, they came up to me and said, you know, geez, you speak well, you look good. And, you know, would you be interested in trying politics? And I was always interested in, I was in student government in high school and college. And of course I gravitated towards it. And there was kind of a bidding war between the Republican and the Democratic Party of, you know, the Democrats wanted me to run for alderman as a Democrat. The Republicans wanted me to run in downtown Chicago for the State House. And I was a Republican at the time, so I went with the Republicans and ran for the State House. And when I got married and went on my honeymoon, when I came back, I lost that race because it was a kamikaze mission. And when I came back from my honeymoon off the East Coast, I had a bunch of emails and voicemails that John Porter, the congressman from the North Shore of Chicago, was vacating. And, you know, a vacated seat is, you know, the best chance of anybody to win.
Sure, absolutely.
So I involved myself in an 11-way Republican primary that the New York Times called the dirtiest congressional race in the history of the country. that's a quote. I hope I come across as a kind of a nice, decent young man of 49. But yeah. I have never experienced the ruthlessness and the total lack of regard of the human spirit than I did when I started to go in the polls. You know, with very little money, people get nervous. And I'm talking everything from phone taps, credit checks, whisper campaigns, people following me when dropping my kids off at school. Thank God I had a couple of reporters that, you know, they liked me because I was honest with them. I spoke things from my heart, and they would, you know, I'd literally get phone calls at 11 o'clock at night. And I'm not getting all the president's men here, but right. I'm telling you a true story. I would literally get phone calls at 10, 11 o'clock at night saying, you have no idea what people are saying, you know, what whisperers to our office are saying about you and now Senator Mark Kirk and a couple of other of our opponents. It got really, really nasty. And when the pro wrestler, and I've got this article on my wall, when the pro wrestler stands up in one of the wealthiest congressional districts in the country and cries that this is, you know, really too nasty for him, there's a problem.
It does say something, doesn't it?
But I eventually dropped out, and, you know, seeing the polls and it being a realist, and I ended up endorsing Mark Kirk, who won the primary and then went on to win the general, and now is the United States Senator, and we're still great political friends, thank God. And so it was quite shocking to find out that politics, without a doubt, was much nastier than pro wrestling.
How do you like that?
Yeah.
All right, John.
And that's the God's honest truth story.
I hear you. Stay with me, please. We got to take a break, but I want to come back and talk with you some more about the current state of politics. All right?
Thanks.
All right. We're speaking with John Stewart, and please don't go away. We got a whole lot more to go when we come back. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. And, of course, that's our Dancing Queen tune that we usually play when we're going to talk about Barack Obama. You know, Jordan got the Warrior King. We get stuck with the Dancing Queen. Right now we got on the line Johnny Stewart, the illustrious Johnny Stewart is what the name he wrestled under, John Stewart. And that name has caused you a bit of confusion, or a bit of interesting circumstances, I guess, John.
Yeah, about 5-6 years ago, a charter school in Ogden, Utah, a charter school, like it's like a Montessori school.
Yeah.
A unique way of saying, you know, kind of a free thinking high school. They called me and hired me to speak to the students about politics and the entertainment industry. And, I didn't think anything of it. I thought, fine. She said she got me off my website because all of the wrestlers for the AWA had to have their own website. And about two days before the event, and I'm a Catholic school guy, I'm thinking you're going to fly me there to Utah. I'm going to speak to the kids, and I'm going to meet the parents in the rectory and have coffee and cake. Well, the morning, two days before the event, I get a call at 4 in the morning. My wife goes, oh, my God, somebody died. I said, no, it's a radio station. I know that from running for politics. When you get an early call, it's usually a radio station they want you to be on about something. And so this radio station in Chicago, Jonathan Brandmeier's show, calls me and, hey, we want to talk about this high school mix up John Stewart thing. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, don't you know? And I said, know what? He goes, dude, and I'm verbatim. He goes, dude, you got to turn on the TV. You are all over the place. And I'm like, what? And I got, you know, I'm a nice little Catholic boy. I'm like, what the hell did I do? And you know, so what had happened is this teacher thought she was contacting John Stewart from Comedy Central.
No. Right.
My pictures were all over my website. It said wrestler, author, pro wrestler, businessman. That doesn't describe Jonathan Leibowitz, a.k.a. John Stewart.
Right.
And a slow news cycle turned into really a three-day free-for-all where I literally did Fox, CNN, CBS Morning Show, Inside Edition. There were production TV trucks around my house for literally 2 days, and so it's a slow news cycle, and I became a mini celebrity for 2 days. So that was really funny. My kids got a kicked out of that.
All right, you mentioned in the last segment that you know, you found the world of politics to be much dirtier than the world of pro wrestling.
Absolutely.
What do you think when you're looking at it today?
Well, first of all, if I hear Rubio or Cruz saying one more time that another third place victory and we're unstoppable, I think I'm going to jump off a bridge.
Only in politics can you come in third and claim victory, right?
I mean, literally, in New Hampshire, it's another third place victory and we will be unstoppable. Nobody's going to stop. You know, it's laughable. You know, I think that I'm talking an insider view or people that I've talked to who are deep, deep insider, and I'm not talking about Senator Mark Kirk. The shockwaves of Donald Trump's campaign that is going through and reverberating through the Beltway, I can tell you, is nothing short of, epic proportions. You know, the people in this country, Republican, Independent, GOP, we think the system is rigged, and they threw us overboard 20 years ago. And I think that the GOP and the Republicans want a barroom brawler this time. They want somebody that's going to stand up and take a stand and try and do something that Barack Obama, I think, tried to do, or maybe he didn't, or he at least pledged he was going to do, which was going to completely shake up Washington. And we know that he got there and he became, unfortunately, another suit. And that was something that was really a hard pill to swallow with a lot of Republicans that may have voted for him. And again, the Republican Party and Republican voters want a brawler this time. They don't want a statesman. And that pretty much leaves almost everybody out on the sidelines, including, Jeb Bush, which obviously dropped out, and Rubio and Cruz. You know, Rubio, I think people see him as an extreme constitutionalist. I think that's great, but it's like having an Amway person over at your house. It's in your face 24/7. I mean that about Cruz.
Yeah.
And Rubio with his robotic speeches and I just don't think that he's going. I just don't think he is going to resonate with the people who are simply asking, like I am, who is willing to cast aside the lobbyists, cast aside the special interests, and go into Washington and speak for the common man. And I'm not talking about, some kind of bad political speech from the 70s. I'm literally talking about somebody that is going to say, basically stand up on TV and say, this is what's happening. This is where we're being stonewalled. I think this is ridiculous. And I want the American people to metaphorically revolt on this. And I truly believe the American people think Donald Trump, for the first time, like a Ross Perot, and maybe like a Buchanan, and definitely like Andrew Jackson back in the 1800s,
yep,
is going to be able to stand up and say, hey, throw care to the wind. I'm a billionaire. I really don't care what the end result is going to be, but I'm going to tell you the truth. And I think that's what the people are looking for. You know, he goes on TV and talks about 9/11 and talks about the Saudi Arabian government, or maybe Saudi Arabia money interests might have been a possible culprit for at least organizing 9/11. And the media goes wild, and the polls go up, and the media goes wild again. Well, the polls go up because we Americans heard a million times over that there's 28 pages redacted from a security memo and a security investigation that basically says people within Saudi Arabia money basically funded 9/11.
Yep.
So, he's speaking the truth at some times. in the campaign, and I think that's why it's resonating with the voters. And I think he's going to be a slam dunk on Super Tuesday and ride it all the way to the convention.
I think you're right on that last point, especially. There's something else also that I think Donald Trump understands that typically Republicans have no clue about, and that he understands, at least the way I see it, is that politics is a lot like professional wrestling in the sense that if you can make that connection with your audience, with your voters, and you get that sense of loyalty developed between you, it's damn near impossible to break that. And I think that's what he's doing with the people who are supporting him.
He does. I think that's a great statement. People look at him and say, I don't care that he's got funny hair. I don't care that he went bankrupt on some businesses. The man, in my opinion, is speaking the truth, and I truly believe, because he's not tied to any lobbyists and he's not tied to any special interests, that this man is going to finally be the one. He's going to be the messiah for the silent majority and in Joe Average American. And I think I don't think that's a stretch by what people are thinking that he's going to do. And I think, again, and many insiders, this is the hotshot general manager coming to, you know, ride into town to run the business that's been run, you know, by the idiot son and the family members. And now the guy that's going to, you know, kick butt and take names is riding into town. He's got everybody running for cover. And that's certainly happening in Washington. And it's kind of, for somebody like me that is an outsider too, I'm tickled to death that it's happening. And if he does what he says, he will shake up Washington, hopefully for the better.
Heck, if he just did half of what he says, he'd shake up Washington for the better.
Absolutely. Even with Hillary, the more, and this is an interesting thing, and I've never heard anybody talk about this, and I'm not saying that I've come up with a huge revelation, but to me, the more that Hillary goes day after day after day and doesn't get indicted, it seems like the email scandal is kind of being put off to the shelf by the Attorney General. I think that's nothing more than a campaign, you know, slogan and a campaign speech and campaign buzz for Donald Trump, because it's more of the same.
Oh, yeah.
They look at Hillary when she's not getting indicted, she's not getting questioned or her feet to the fire, she's not going to be accountable like so many other people with 9/11, and the voters say it's going to be more of the same. And I think it's just a continual campaign pop for Donald Trump every day that ticks by that Hillary Clinton is not indicted.
Yeah, it's just another instance of what I have been calling around here history being on Trump's side, where these circumstances are happening that favor him because of what he's saying and what he's projecting.
Absolutely.
Hey, John, what's your website? Where can people find more about you and visit you?
JohnAllenStewart.com, spelled like the comedian, AllenStewart.com. I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter at John Allen Stewart. I think that's probably the best place for people to get me is on Twitter. And I'd love for people to reach out to me. I'm always happy to talk to a fan, all seven of them out there.
Hey, listen, we're going to have to do this a whole lot more.
Man, you got to have me back in your show. It was a pleasure. I really did. I had a great time.
All right, we'll do this again here in just a couple weeks as this primary season rolls along, because I want to get your take on
that.
This on a regular
You're
basis.
You're a good man, Ed. You're a good man.
All right, thank you, Johnny. We appreciate
it.
That's
thank
the
you.
Illustrious Johnny Stewart, spoiled rotten. All right, when we come back, Mike Bass is in the studio, and he's going to join
us. When?
Only because we'd let her. Welcome back to the show, folks. 407-774-8255 is the number. I'm Christopher Hart, and with me in the studio right now is Mike Bass. And Mike is a sponsor of the show. He came on about 4 or 5 months ago. And not only that, but he's got a great mind for taxes and the different tax plans. For instance, what was it, just a couple of Sundays ago?
We're talking about the fair tax and the flat tax and making the distinction between those, because that seems to get confusing, and talking about some of the plans that some of the candidates are proposing and that sort of thing. So we had a great time with Larry Walters here from the Fair Tax local group here.
Yeah, that was a couple of Sundays ago. You can find it in our archive at our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com. And I got a lot of compliments about that, because a lot of people were confused. And we talked about flat tax, we talked about fair tax, we talked about the VAT tax, and the difference between all of those and how they are being played out in this campaign season. We did a little window shopping of the various plans and came away with a very much of a better understanding of where all this is going right now. And But the reason Mike knows a lot about taxes and that sort of thing is because he is a financial advisor. He's a guy that needs to know about taxes, right? Because that has a lot to do with how you invest for people's retirements.
Absolutely. I think, unfortunately, a lot of people ignore the tax issue, and they think that we see this all the time. People make mistakes of just trying to avoid taxes today, thinking that's the best thing to do for them. And,
right.
And certainly some of that may be good for them at that point, but you have to think about the worst time you're going to be paying taxes is when you're no longer working. That's when you have no control. At least when you're working, you earn an income, you've got some ability to juke and jive a little bit, you know, make
right.
some different changes in how you deal with your taxes. But if you delay all your taxes until you get into retirement, you're just subjecting yourself to a nightmare, no matter what the federal government decides to just unload as taxes rise. And that's one of the myths about retirement is you're going to always be in a lower tax bracket.
Right. And one example of that would be, say, with IRAs. You can have the traditional IRA where you deduct your contributions now,
right.
but you have to pay taxes on all the withdrawals later on. It's going to be considered taxable income.
Right.
Whereas with the Roth IRA, you go ahead and pay the taxes on the amount that you put in, but then when you withdraw it, every bit's tax-free.
Comes out tax-free. So it puts you in a great position to be able to do that. There are obviously some limitations on all these kinds of programs to be able to do that. But
right.
you see people come in to retire and they've got no money. They've got no cash anywhere. They've got all their assets into pre-tax 401k IRAs. And then they get ready to retire and they start looking at it and say, well, how do I get this money out? And I'm going, well, what were you thinking when you put it in?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
And the problem with taxes is not that you defer the taxes. You're also deferring the tax calculation, which makes it even more complicated. People don't realize that you're deferring the tax calculation. You're not just saving taxes. There's a great analogy about this, would you rather pay taxes on the seed or would you rather pay taxes on the crop? Because that's the difference.
That's the difference, right.
It really is. And so, again, it's not saying you shouldn't defer some taxes. Maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. But this incessant belief that you should just defer all taxes till you get to retirement is really a death knell. Because what you're doing is you're subjecting yourself to the highest tax bracket in retirement. You do not get capital gains, which gives you a tax break. You get ordinary income tax, which
right.
is the highest tax bracket that exists.
Right.
You know, so.
You do not want to have your income considered what they call ordinary income, because it gets treated very extraordinary
when
it comes to paying the taxes on it. And now this is a big part of what you do, isn't it, Mike, at PrimeQuest Wealth Strategies, is you find the best ways for people to have the best retirement.
Well, I think I categorize a little bit differently.
Okay.
We realize there's two ways you can help somebody in my business. One is you can help people find better investments, okay? And that's what most people in this business are trying to do. They're trying to find the better investment.
The better mutual fund.
Better money manager, stock,
exactly,
or whatever.
Right, yeah.
You know, and quite frankly, that's a fool's game. Because if I am the best guy at that, I mean, an extraordinary difference would be that I could earn you 1% more than everybody else. I mean, that'd be extraordinary if I could do that. And, yeah, that's going to make some difference over the long haul. That's great. But that's not going to make a huge difference when it comes to really retirement. So what we try to do is we realize that people are using wrong strategies in how they handle their money. So people are transferring, we say they're transferring away wealth unknowingly and unnecessarily. So we help people find money that they are unknowingly and unnecessarily transferring away in the way they pay their mortgages, in the way they deal with their taxes we're talking about right now, in the way that they buy things. They buy their major purchases like cars and the way they pay for weddings. The way people pay for college educations really is wrong. Costs people a lot more money than it needs to cost people.
So you're a financial advisor that actually helps people more efficiently spend and utilize the money that they have,
Right.
And instead of focusing on trying to find that next best deal, so
right,
to speak.
Exactly. So, and to take this a little different path is that we have, I tell people that financial planning doesn't work. And that kind of gets people's attention. They
work. Right. It was.
And I don't call myself a financial planner anymore. I don't do that. And the reason it doesn't work is that financial planning is based on a flawed concept. It's based on a concept that says, I'm gonna save my money, grow my money, do whatever, and I'm gonna pile it up somewhere, like pile it up on the table here.
Your nest egg.
And ING, which doesn't exist anymore, it's now been bought out by Voya or whatever it is.
Yeah,
they had a commercial.
ING was a big bank, wasn't it?
Yeah, a big bank. Yeah, and they did investments and that sort of thing. But they had a commercial that I love. It was a number of years ago, and it was people walking around with their number under their arm. And the whole concept was what is your number? And I get clients come in and say, especially the engineers, they come in and go, you know, what's my number? And what they're asking is, what is the number? What is my net worth number that allows me to be able to retire?
And in other words, how big does that nest egg have to be?
Right. And that is the fallacy. Because here's the problem. I want you to think about this. And you're a business person. I'm sure there's some business people listening to us today. A net worth statement is a personal balance sheet. Who runs their business on their balance sheet? No one does. I mean, you give a balance sheet to a bank to borrow money. That's basically all you use for a balance sheet.
It's like a photograph in time.
It's a guess at what things are worth today.
Right.
And so when we base our use as a measurement tool your net worth statement as saying when you should be able to retire, that's insane. Because it's just a photo of what's really what it's worth. For instance, IRAs. Just take IRAs for instance. So you got $1 million in an IRA. You go, wow, that's great. Well, most people put that on their balance sheet. That's $1 million. Well, you don't have $1 million there
because
some portion of that belongs to the federal government. You
right.
have a partner there.
Right.
That's not your money. You have no clue how much money that is. So that's the concept we help people try to understand is this is not just about creating net worth. And I tell people, if they don't believe that, you go talk to somebody in 2007 that retired and thought they had enough money to live on. And you go back to them in 2009 and ask them how things went.
Right.
They made a huge mistake.
Right.
Because they didn't understand that it's not just about a net worth statement. For instance, the financial institutions are very good at being on your side of the table as long as you're accumulating wealth.
Right.
Because they're collecting fees and commissions, and that's fine. There's no problem with that. Everybody should get paid for what they do. I got no problem with that. But the minute you go into retirement, they go to the other side of the table. They become adversarial to you because you want to take the money out. Well, the more money you take out, the less money they make. And here's the funny part about it. They hadn't figured out how to give you your money back and still make money. So that's why the industry runs around not knowing how to keep people without running out of money.
I see.
And that's the real crux, and that's the dirty secret about the financial planning world, is nobody knows very few people really know how to fund retirement without running out of money because they're not using their money efficiently.
Now, I take it, work a lot with people who are close to retirement, but obviously you'd like to work with people as early in the process as possible, I would take it, right?
I do, and I typically work with people 50 and older, but I work with 40. If I can get somebody in the 40s, that's great.
Right.
I'm just being honest. I find that a lot of times people they have to get beat up a little bit before they understand they really need some help.
Right.
You know, I mean, I play golf, you know. I still take some lessons. You know, I go snow skiing. I take lessons, you know. All the great golfers are still taking lessons.
They got,
you know?
That's right. They got so, coaches, yeah.
But people aren't willing to pay coaches until they know they need to learn something. So that's what we do.
If you'd like to meet with Mike and sit down and talk with him, his phone number is 407-767-7800. 407-767-7800. He's going to stay with us, and we'll be right back after this short break. But once again, folks, you know, we're all looking at this down the road, and the more you know about it, the more you're prepared. And just, you know, what you see on the news media and here on the TV, that ain't nearly the whole story. That's why you need to talk with somebody like Mike Bass. 407-767-7800. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. I'm sitting here with the Donald Trump of the financial industry. Tell the folks why I said that, Mike Bass.
Well, because I find myself speaking the truth, telling the truth about what's all the things that I've seen in this industry for the last 20 years. And, you know, the industry doesn't tell the truth. We were just talking at the break about mortgages, for instance. And you look on TV, and what do you see? You see them pushing 15-year mortgages.
15-year mortgages.
Right.
Yeah.
And they tell you, well, 15-year mortgage saves you all this interest. So, I mean, it must be better for you. And they even entice you because a 15-year mortgage rate, interest rate, will be a little bit less than a 30-year mortgage. And I tell people, you know, don't you think about something. When you're buying a mortgage, when you're trying to get a mortgage, who do you think, I mean, you're on one side of the table, they're on the other side of the table. So if they're trying to sell you a particular type of mortgage, do you think that's a mortgage that's better for them or for you? And let me tell you something. They're selling mortgages that are better for them. And so what they're doing, a 15-year mortgage makes them more money than a 30-year mortgage.
A 15-year mortgage makes the bank more money than a 30-year mortgage?
Yeah, and it takes a while to go through this with people, but think about it this way.
But
this
I take it that their overhead is much lower on the 15-year mortgage.
It has to do with velocity of money, and that gets a little deep in the weeds. But
okay.
But just think about this. If you can, the more you turn money over, the more money you make.
Right.
People think banks and mortgage companies just make money on the interest rate.
So they can loan the money out
quicker,
more quickly.
Quicker and quicker.
I
it's called velocity of money.
Velocity of money.
And so once you begin to understand that, and a very simple way to think about it is, you know, if I owe you $100, when do you want that $100 back?
Today.
You want it today, right?
Yeah.
You don't want me to wait
I
a year from now. That's right.
Okay,
so when someone owes you money, you want it back as quick as you can get it.
Sure.
Think about that. Well, that's what the bank's telling you.
They
hate 30-year mortgages. There's a reason they hate them, because they make less money on it.
But isn't it, though, still in the best interest of the person getting the mortgage to have the 15-year mortgage?
No, it's not.
It's not.
No, and I love this because this ties – see, all the stuff ties together. And we deal with it in these segmented boxes, okay? We just think, how much interest am I paying?
Okay.
Well, think about it. If there's interest, that interest is tax deductible. That interest lowers your tax, your overall taxes.
Right.
I'm going to keep my property maxed out with a mortgage. Because, and this gets, again, it gets a little deeper, but... but money in a house, money in any kind of real estate, does not earn you one penny. Money inside your actual cash in a house earns you zero.
Your equity in it.
Your equity earns you zero. The cash, I don't want you to think about this. If the house is mortgaged and the house and 100% mortgage and the house is 100% debt, they both appreciate the same amount. A house doesn't know it's mortgaged.
Right, right. So as the house appreciates, it's making you it's more
creating
value.
Equity, but it's not your cash.
Right, exactly.
So you don't want to put cash in houses.
Okay.
And so people put all. So that's one of the places we find cash. People got too much money sitting in cash. So
okay.
People got too much money sitting in cash.
Okay.
In houses.
All right. Got Diane on the line right now, who has a question for you, Mike. Diane, thanks for being out there.
Hey guys.
Howdy. How you doing today?
I'm good. I have a question, Mike. Do you help people out of state?
Sure. We can help people out of state. That's not a problem. And
really? That's very cool.
Yeah. So, we can go through webinars and that kind of thing. We can do that.
Oh, cool. Because my son lives in South Carolina.
Okay. We'd be glad to have a talk with him.
Can he call you at this number?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, 407-767-7800. Is there any cost for somebody to just sit down and talk to you?
No, we sit down and talk to somebody in our first meetings. We don't charge anything for first meetings. Because quite frankly, what we're doing is we're trying to understand what it is they're doing. And it's a double interview, I think, is the way I look at it. I mean, I'm looking to see if this is something I can help this person with. And they're looking to see if I'm the type of person they want to work with.
Right.
And so we both decide whether it's something we want to do together.
And obviously there's a little bit of an education in the process going on here, too, because you're not – your standard is, as you say, you don't even call yourself a financial advisor anymore.
No, I really don't. And I don't like the word financial advisor or financial planner for either one of those because we do more than that. In fact, that's the fun part of this to me, is to be able to do that, you know, be able to talk about strategies about this stuff. So it's fun.
All right, Diane.
Well, that's awesome. And Mike, he's in his early 40s, so and they're doing very well. So that would be awesome for you and him, right?
That's, well, that, I, this is your son?
Yes.
You sound like you're, like, younger than 40 to me. I'm shocked. So well, I'd be glad to help them. Absolutely. We've got to talk to them. We'll see what we can do for them.
Diane does have a beautiful voice to go along with her beautiful face and personality.
Aww.
All right. Well, then, yeah, definitely hook them up together.
Yep, and I've got a neighbor that should be talking to you.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, because dealing with these sort of things now makes all the difference in the world later on, even if it's just 2 or 3 or 5 years later. I mean, it can make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know I support your supporters.
I hear you. God, please, I appreciate you so much, Diane. You just don't know how much. God bless you.
God bless you, guys.
All right. Thanks for being out there. But this is why, you know, Diane mentioned our sponsors. You know, I'm proud of our sponsors. We find good sponsors in people who are business people of great integrity and provide great services and are very reasonable in what they charge for their services. Mike Bass, for instance, Aubrey Kahn, Jerry and Janice Shepherd, Jerry's Mercedes-Benz, Scott Miller with My Liberty Threads T-shirts, Pasquale Barba. I mean, I am so proud of our sponsors.
I've only been here about 5 months or so, but every sponsor I met, I've just been really impressed with, and they've all just been really top-notch people in what they do, and it's a great group to get to know and spend time with. I love this.
Well, we're happy to have you as part of our army too. Mike Bass, Prime Quest Wealth Strategies, 407-767-7800, 407-767-7800. Do you have a website that you direct people to?
Yeah, we have a website. It's called primequestwealth.com.
Primequestwealth.com. And you say you hold webinars on there?
No, we don't do it. We don't hold webinars, but if I'm working with a client out of state,
I see.
Distance wise, we'll do webinars so I can go through, teach concepts, because a lot of what I'm doing is teaching people, help them understand the concepts. I mean,
it's amazing how Americans know so little about money.
They really do. I tell people if what you believe to be true turns out not to be true, when do you want to know it? Right? So
either now or never. Right,
exactly. Don't ever tell me. I think the guy who wrote the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he did one of the things in his book. He said, you spend your life climbing the ladder of success, and sometimes you find out when you get to the top of the ladder that it was leaned against the wrong wall. I mean, you know, you want to know that what you're doing has validity and it has some substance to what you're trying to accomplish. And unfortunately, a lot of people go down paths because it's just what people think. It's what they what they were told, what their neighbor tells them, or whatever, you know.
Right. Yeah, the folks, you folks out there, the ones who need to be of you, who need to be speaking to Mike the most, are the ones who are already going to other so-called financial planners, because you need to get this other perspective. You need to get this other side of the story, so to speak. You need to have this other understanding. And, of course, if you're out there and you don't have a plan right now, you need to be talking with Mike Bass, too. As a matter of fact, you're in the prime position because you haven't started down a wrong path. You don't have to correct your course. You can start fresh, the right path, like Diane was talking about with her son.
I love the analogy of a football game. You spend all week putting a plan together, and then the minute the kickoff happens, everything goes out the window. Well, I mean, not everything, but at least and that's kind of what we do. We deal with strategies. And it's tactical. And because we don't create big binders of books and that sort of thing that people put on the shelf and go, well, I've got my plan. You know,
right.
That's not the way this works, because the world changes, guys.
You got to be nimble.
You really do. And so we sit down with clients. We look at what's going on in their life. Their lives change. You know, the economy changes. The world changes. You know, so we have to adjust. And so we sit and meet with clients on an ongoing basis and talk about what's changing. What do we have to do now? You know, we cannot. Years ago, you could just do the same thing and just sit around, and because you didn't see much change going on. We are in a volatile world. What happened in 2001, 2002, when markets crashed and the world went crazy, And then they said that was a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Yeah.
Then we had a 2008,
Seven years later.
Yeah, less than a decade, we had a second once-in-a-lifetime event. You know, this is not going to end. We are in a volatile existence for the near future, for the next 20 years at least.
Yeah, that can either work against you,
yeah,
or you can put it to work for you.
Right.
And that's why you need to know a guy like Mike Bass, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because you can adapt, and you can, and people that sit around and don't make those decisions are really going to be the losers. And the people that can adapt and look at what's going on, they can, you know, you can take advantage of situations.
Yeah. So. And to have the confidence to do that, once again, you need to have a better understanding of the lay of the land, so to speak.
How money works. Why do you understand how money works? And that's because the people out there do understand how money works, and they take advantage of that. And if you're not applying and not making the best use of all of your money, then it's going to cost you in the long run. Because if you're not doing it, someone else is making it, taking advantage of your money.
Absolutely. Mike Bass, Prime Quest Wealth Strategies, primequestwealth.com, 407-767-7800, 407-767-7800. And, of course, you can listen for his commercials that run during the show, and will continue to run during the show. And Mike is going to be a regular on the show to talk about matters like this and to talk tax policy and politics and that sort of thing, too. And Mike is now a member of the American Adversaries cast of characters, you might call us around here. But anyway, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. But once again, Mike Bass, Prime Quest Wealth Strategies, primequestwealth.com, 407-767-7800. Do yourself a favor, and learn how money works so it'll work for you. All right. Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for tonight. Don't forget, Thursday night at 6 o'clock, national coverage of the CNN Salem Media Group Republican debate live from Houston. And let's see. Yep, Mike MacBath will be back with us tomorrow night. But once again, Mike Bass, thanks for being with us, and thanks for being a sponsor of the American Adversaries.
It's my pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Okay, so Prime Quest Wealth Strategies. Don't forget that. 407-767-7800. Night, everybody.
FM 105.5 at AM 660. The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. The official radio station of Decision 2016.